And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there. What'd you say?
Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to Warriors Plus Minus. We are days away from the 2021 NBA draft.
We can maybe even say hours because we're at the point where we're under 100 hours. So
yeah, you can say hours away.
If we were doing this visually, there would be a clock in the lower right-hand corner. It would be ticking.
I wish I had a little button to press to make the sound effect of time ticking. But this is arguably... This is the most influential Warriors draft since 2012. This is a big deal, and we're here to talk about it. I got Anthony Slater, the superstar Warriors writer. Ethan Strauss, who's the superstar in his own right. Tim Kawakami is off doing 49ers things.
Oh, he's the biggest superstar. He doesn't even need to be here.
Superstar. He's demanding a trade.
I don't know that I agree with your lead-in. I think last year's draft, having the number two pick and deciding between Wiseman and LaMelo and how that plays out over the next 5 years might be more influential than this 7-14. I mean, if a big trade goes down and all of the capital is used anyways, then maybe. But I don't know that that's the case.
I'm going this year because at two, can you miss really? Right, you know, like either way they were getting.
Potentially.
Either they were getting a really good player. At two, I mean, that's an epic fail. You're getting a good player at two. On this one, though, the swing and miss rate is higher. Like, they kind of got to nail it.
The argument, I think, is that in this draft, it feels as though it's championship or bust. And last year, you could have made the same argument, except Klay got hurt. And so that immediately took some of the wind out of the sails.
Klay got hurt, by the way, on draft night. Remember that? Yeah. That was what was like...
That was insane.
That was such a... It was like they were an hour away from like deciding on Wiseman, and it was like Klay Thompson hurt his lower leg in LA this morning. It was like, wait, what?
I remember that.
That was crazy. Also, looking back in the more distant past, 2012, when we look back on it, the most influential draft in recent Warriors history. But I don't think that way it was viewed at the time because the Warriors were such a reliable failure that you just looked at it and went, yeah, they're just going to screw this up again. Like they screw up everything. There wasn't this sense of the franchise future hinges on what they do tonight. It was, let's see what they do. That was more the feeling.
Also, the franchise changed because of who they took at 35, not 7. I mean, like, obviously, 7 helped. Oh, no. I'm sure going in, 7 was the pick, right? When you're, I'm sure all the stories that you two wrote the next, you know, in the days after were all like Harrison Barnes focused. So you never really know. In retrospect, you know what Ethan's saying, what drafts are actually as influential as you think. But yes, in the moment right now, there definitely does seem to be a lot riding on the next 48 hours.
From that sentiment is what I was thinking, because 2012, what it did have was this air of this is setting up the next few years. And this is one of the rare chances where you have two first round picks and there is a lot at stake. Last time it was after the Bogut trade had gone down. And they had to figure out, like, yo, all right, where are we going now? Monte's gone. Bogut is here. All right, let's start putting this thing together. Even though they aren't starting over, this feels like the pieces that they're trying to get, they want them to be set in place, right? The players that they get now should be part of a core moving forward. And maybe that is informed by 2012. But this feels like they can't just get dudes to put on the end of the bench who might not pan out. They kind of need to nail these.
Kind of. The only thing I would say is, like, there's a chance they use 7 and 14. I think at this point there's a better than, you know, 50% chance they're probably using 7 and 14. And maybe, like, Duarte's at 14 and, let's say, Kuminga's at 7. And Kuminga's not in the definitely not in the playoff rotation probably as a rookie. Like, maybe Duarte's playing 12 minutes, 20 minutes. I mean, maybe he's helpful. But you could argue if we're just talking about next season's championship, I mean, it's probably more important what they do in free agency. If they get a Batum, if they bring Bazemore back, like, there's a chance that this draft is very monumental for the next half decade, next decade. But there's a chance this doesn't, what they do draft night, if they don't make a huge move, doesn't have that much of an effect on, like, what they look like in the playoffs.
It won't have that immediate impact, but they won't be getting this chance again.
There's also the Steph component where it feels like, okay, this is his window. He wants to win now. I think last time it was, they've got such a high pick that you can't possibly expect him to deal that pick for win now. And as we said, Klay got hurt draft night. There seem to be more elements and push-pull factors in this one. There's more intrigue in this one. And I think Steph's a patient guy. I think we can all say that he wants them. He would rather they get veteran help. He would rather they compete for a championship. And so how they manage that is also something to watch in this draft that I don't think was something to watch in the last one.
Well, we have the right guy on the line right now to discuss this with.
Steph is here? Hey, is Wardell's here?
That would be terrific. But, you know, we have the next best thing, Marcus Thompson.
I should call him, huh?
Because when we talk about, like, veteran, I mean, obviously Bradley Beal's a name. He's the name to watch over the next 48 hours with this, like, somewhat of a hint that he's maybe possibly thinking about asking out. And, like, I don't know. In history, when guys are somewhat nudging out to the public that they're thinking about it, usually that doesn't mean it's going in a great direction with their current franchise. He only has 1 year of team control left. If I'm the Wizards at this point, I think they should rebuild. I don't even think I'd need a trade request if I was running the Wizards. But, you know, that's here or there. Just lay out the Bradley Beal situation as we're talking on Tuesday morning.
The foremost thing that matters about this Bradley Beal situation, I think that is revealed in their desire to get somebody, is not just that they want a veteran. They want somebody else who can create offense, who can carry an offense. I think the Bradley Beal thing is about what happens if Klay needs more time. Like, who creates if Steph misses 9 games or 10 games next year? And that was the difference this year, right? Like, they went 2-7. They do better in those games. They're not even in the play-in potentially. So I do think it's about who else can carry a load and take some of it off of Steph. So I don't think it's just any veteran. I do think that's why they're not, like, pining to get a Pascal Siakam, right? Like, even though he might be a nice player, nice fit in, he doesn't solve that problem for you. He doesn't make you say, here, take the reins, Pascal. We're not going to panic while Steph sits for 6 minutes, right? Like, so I do think it's more about getting a player who can really kind of take over games. I know they wanted Wiggins to be that, but that's clearly not his thing, right? Like, it's not the thing you want to rely on from him.
It's funny you say that. Not only do they want Wiggins to be that guy, there were, like, a few games last season where he was. I remember an early game in Detroit where he scored like 16 in the fourth, and there were a few other games where fourth quarter came and he, you know, extended the lead with like 8 straight points, and you will never see Draymond react more on the bench than he did in those games. It was like, yes, like, that's exactly what we've needed. But like you said, it's once every 9 games or something like that.
I liked Anthony's description of Wiggins in his last article. A capable placeholder. That's Andrew Wiggins, a capable placeholder. And in a way, that's a win. That's maybe even better than the expectations when they got him. But that is what you expect. Capable placeholding. It's not going to necessarily swing you into contention.
None of this happens unless Beal tells the Wizards, I want out. Like, so the first thing that has to happen is Beal has to say, yes, I want out. And that's a decision that he's reportedly supposed to make before the draft. And then he has to say, I want to go to the Warriors, or give the Wizards a list of teams that he's willing to re-sign with.
Not just re-sign, I think extend before he even hits free agency.
Here's a list of teams he's willing to sign a contract extension with to basically nail down who the trade partners is, and one of those have to be the Warriors. But I also think there's another layer of how much is it going to cost. I don't think they'd be willing to give up everything for Bradley Beal. I think the deal would have to be right. And even, like, you know, the biggest proponents would be like, hold on, that's too much. I don't think a deal with Wiseman and Poole and Picks and Wiggins, I think they'd rather just run it back. But if you just start looking at the landscape of players who could kind of fill this one void of another playmaker, creator, like Bradley Beal is probably at the top of the list. Damian Lillard is at the top of the list. So I think that's just a matter of them looking at the landscape and saying, who could most help us? But I don't think that's the only path. And sometimes I wonder if the need for a creator embellishes the need for a star, right? Like, they need another guy who can make you feel comfortable with Steph sitting those 6 minutes, or when he's bringing up a half court in a playing game, or you're okay with the defense saying, yeah, we're going to double team Steph at half court because you got another guy who you feel good with. I feel like if they just get a guy who's good enough to be that guy, it doesn't have to be a Bradley Beal. And they probably won't get it in the draft, but they might be able to get it in free agency. Or it might be Jordan Poole. Right, Ethan?
I wouldn't put a cap on that. I remember last season, I said, boldly I might add, that I thought he was their most talented offensive player outside of Steph, or most skilled offensive player outside of Steph. And I caught some blowback, guys. I caught some blowback. I caught some guff, as they might say, because I said it early in the season. But I think at this point, that was true. And I'll give myself a pat on the back. And it won't necessarily salve the wounds of underestimating LaMelo Ball. But, you know, it's something. I love Jordan Poole's game. I don't necessarily think he'll be what we saw in the Seattle Pro-Am video that Slater posted in his article against guys who are shorter than he is. But the skill level is incredible. He competes. I like that he got battle tested a bit in games that matter down the stretch, and is an excellent compliment. I think it'd be crazy to say, oh, he'll be better than Bradley Beal, but could he turn into 80% of Beal, 90% in terms of impact? That's not inconceivable.
I see, like, McCollum, like, where could he get anywhere near like a CJ McCollum? Maybe the answer is no, but I do think the
isn't that the answer? Like, you good, right?
I think he could, and that doesn't mean that I think he will, because those are two different things. You say something like that, people go, you thought he was going to be the next CJ. Like, no, I think it's a possibility. I just wouldn't want to sell short on him. I like his game a lot. And the Beal thing to me feels weird. Does it feel weird to you guys? Like, it's not the perfect fit. I get it. He's a top 15 player. He's very, very good. But it almost feels like they're just doing something to do it. That they're going, oh my God, we got to get on the timeline. Oh my God, we need to win now. We need a star. Let's get this guy who is in some ways overlapping in what he does with Steph and with Klay. I mean, if they do it, I have to say, I come to the conclusion that maybe some of what they're hearing about Klay is not so great, because otherwise it just doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense to me.
The argument for the Beal trade would be you are 15% closer to a title next season. I do think, like, having Bradley Beal on the roster, as much as there's potentially an overlap, would make you better than having Wiggins, Wiseman, two rookies on the roster next season. I think you've got to be creative coaching wise. I think, you know, Ron Adams and the defensive staff would have to come up with some stuff. But, you know, you saw it in the playoffs. You know, Clippers were putting 3-guard lineups out there at times and having a lot of success. And there's teams now that'll go no centers pretty much for like the entire time. Like, you can win different ways in the modern NBA. And I do think Beal just like gets you closer to a title next season. Now, is that worth burning the entire bridge to the future? That's where the argument comes in. But I think they're better with Beal next season. Would you? I mean, like, do you think they're not as good a team?
I think the ceiling is higher. I think that much is true. And they were not great offensively last season, so that would help a tremendous amount. But I also wouldn't be shocked if they make these moves and they get them, and then we look at it and we go, ooh, this didn't actually vault them anywhere special just because of the overlap. So, gun to my head, are they better? I would say yes.
Yeah. What you're saying is there's probably more risk than is being, you know, let on. It's not as much of just like a home run fit, wow, like immediate favorites in the West, like hand them one of the next 2 to 3 titles.
it's not getting Giannis. It's not getting, I mean, not getting Giannis for various reasons with him just being the superstar of the playoffs. But I'm talking about like LeBron getting Anthony Davis, where it's, oh yes, that fits. That's the thing you didn't have, and now you have it to pair with the thing you do have. That's not really what Bradley Beal is for them.
I think he's more of a fit than Lillard even. I mean, Lillard obviously is considered a higher level star. I think there's a bit more defense, and I've talked to people, you know, within the Warriors that like he has some defensive tools. He's a little bit stronger than you think. He's like 6'3", 6'4", but remember early in his career, like he was considered like a pretty good defender. Now, I think just Washington's situation and his just like scoring prowess made it so he kind of stopped caring about defense as much. But I think if he cared about defense, I do think he could be a bit better of a defender than maybe he's been the last few years.
I think the issue though is who is he guarding, right? And if you're getting him and you're not putting Clay on the point guards, you know, because it's probably not the best thing for his Achilles, is Bradley Beal the guy you got chasing around point guards? Can he do that, and how much does that cost his office? That's my only question. I do think there's a bit of...
Bradley Beal's best friend Kent Bazemore's out there locking people up.
I mean, that's four guards.
Yeah, Bazemore's a wing. Hey, you could, by the way, if this Beal thing comes to fruition, like they would have to play small. They would just be a really small team. Now, I'm telling you, the Clippers were doing in like the West Finals, were having lineups with Patrick Beverly, Terrence Mann, and Reggie Jackson out there. You know, you can do weird stuff in the modern NBA. You really can, but they would have to commit to that type of style, which I think they'd be okay with. I mean, if you make that trade, you are committing to that type of style.
You're definitely committing small. I think the presumption is the Warriors would be, they're a team that were right where they were last year, right? Like in a play-in tournament, seventh best team in the West. What gets them over the hump? You add Beal, there's no question. They're just better. They're a better team. And now you got to think of Beal as the piece in the playoffs, right? And the people who want this to happen, those who want to win a championship, they're thinking about the championship. They're thinking about like Western Conference Finals. What are you going to see as a defense and how do you counter it? That's where the Beal payoff is. Now, the question becomes, in order to get to that moment, do you have enough if you sacrifice the team defense, the individual defense, size, right? Like if you give that up.
This is the reason I don't think there's going to be a trade, because like, we could sit here and go, like, they'd miss Wiggins. Like, they would miss Andrew Wiggins' defense. Like, Andrew Wiggins provides value to them that on the trade market, suddenly if you just put him in the trade market, teams don't. They're like, oh, that contract. Like, that makes the package a little bit worse. We'll take the contract because you got to match salary. And to me, it's the same with Poole. You know, we're talking about where the organization believes Poole's career might be going and where we kind of all are like, you know, those last like 15 games really started to like show something. I'm not just talking, oh, the front office thinks it's like Steph Curry and Draymond Green are like believe in Jordan Poole now. And like, I feel like all Wiseman, another one, he's kind of a depressed asset on the market. Internally, they're like, I still think it might be going somewhere very good in the next like 3 years. I think the value of the assets they have, they view it up much more positively than the league views it. And Wiggins is the greatest example of just like, you know, they would miss Andrew Wiggins' wing defense next season. Yet if they take that out there, they can't tell an opposing team, hey, you know, come get Andrew Wiggins' wing defense. That's what like affects the trade.
You sure they can't? That would be great. Put that in the video, huh? I'm sure they can slice up a video. And like, yo, watch this rotation here.
He got two votes for second team All-NBA defense. Look at this.
So on to the draft, because they're going to make these picks.
Well,
right?
Hold on. I wanted to, like, are there any other trade? Like, for, let's say Beal's off the table.
Why do we think they're going to make these picks, by the way? Like, is it because Joe is so committed to making the picks and loves the draft so much?
That's one of the reasons.
Because everybody else in the league is looking at the situation and going, what the hell are they doing?
I don't think they want to trade Wiseman. Like, and when you really think about it, like the next guy who you'd want on this roster is Jordan Poole. I don't think they want to trade Jordan Poole either. And at that point, what do you have? I don't think they make the trade because the pieces they want to give up, like how valuable are they really? Like Slater just got through saying Wiggins is just not, he's more valuable to the Warriors than he is to the rest of the league.
And their coaching hires might be a tell in this whole thing. Just as we're saying, it might be a tell about Klay Thompson if they try to get Beal. It might be a tell that they're making the picks, that they make all these coaching shakeups behind the scenes. And it's, no, really, development. We need to do development. We need to hire these guys for development. That might be an indication that, hey, this is the only way it's going to work. Unless something wows us that we don't really see coming, we're doing it through the young guys, which, I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
It puts more of a spotlight on them next season, but I do think there is a belief like they can contend with what they have. I mean, and when I say what they have, that includes like they're probably going to go veteran with the 14th pick, and they believe that like they will get like rotation helpers in, you know, next week in free agency. We all know how free agency works. They may have indications behind the scenes right now, like Batum's like, yeah, I'm coming, or you know, something.
They
like
had
that.
Him last year, Nick Clay. Yeah.
Clay better not, you know, get injured on draft night again.
By the way, that was, as an aside, a little weird when Bob was talking in the press conference, the pre-draft press conference, and he was talking about how Clay is the most uninvolved, which, and he had to kind of temper it a bit with, we love Clay, and you know, what's Clay doing? I mean, I don't know, I think he's in LA, and I was thinking,
we still like him, like we still love him, like what was that qualifier?
It was, well, it's another situation, it seems, where he's not completely around, just like last time, which
I will step in and say he has been around a ton more.
This is off season, man. Yeah.
He's been taking the boat. He lives, you know, I don't want to like say exactly where he lives, but he lives somewhere where he can get to water quickly, and he has a boat clearly that he's put on, you know, social media, and he has spent a lot of this off season taking the boat across the bay and working out. They say he's been in the facility a lot more.
That's positive, and that's good, and you just hope that they're, I don't know, having more of a plan with both sides being in on it than last season with what happened. And so, hey, if they're both on the same page in that respect, that's great. It was just odd. It was also odd that Bob mentioned having traded him over 300 times in his third season, which it was a loose Bob. It was loose Bob Myers press conference. It was not tight-lipped.
Which I don't mind.
No. Give me more loose Bob.
You know, I know Clay was at the workout where it was Moody, Davion Mitchell, Jalen Johnson. That day when those guys came in, Kai Jones, he was there that day. And, you know, he like took Wiseman out on his boat and stuff. He is more involved than he's been. But I wanted to ask you guys like about, you know, we talk about maybe more trades on the margins. You know, Indiana, who's sitting at 13, has been rumored as a team that's aggressive, you know, and they have kind of those like mid-tier vets, the Miles Turners, the TJ Warrens, that maybe there's like pick swaps plus you flip some veterans, or Memphis, who just moved up to 10, apparently is like trying to maybe move up again a little bit. Could you do something with 7 and 10 and get Brandon Clark or something like that? Is there anything out there that you guys see as like a mid-level move that's not the big home run, you don't give up all the assets, but maybe would help?
It's not even a Siakam. It's less than that. It's
Miles Turner's the name that's out there a bunch.
I feel like move back is going to be in play. Part of the reason there are people who are like, yo, trade the picks, is just because with the minimum deal and with the taxpayer mid-level, man, that's a tough thing to bank on to get what you need, right? Like, so if you're picking young players who might not contribute, you're down to basically finding somebody to take less money. It's just a tough prospect. If they get to the situation where Jonathan Kuminga falls to 7, it might be another way to pick up, you know, some middling veteran help by moving back, right? To get back to a team. Like, I mean, even if you get like a Brandon Clark, you take that in a heartbeat. But if you're a 7 and you find there's a lot of people who want Kuminga, and if the Warriors don't want him because of what he's not ready to contribute, to me, that's where you could drop back to 10 and try to pick up a player. That feels like the most realistic like move to me, is doing that.
I think they could definitely use a stretch 5 just for lineup versatility. And so, I mean, I know Aaron Baines had a bad season last season, but maybe that type of guy.
Is Aaron Baines allowed in Chase after breaking Steph's hand?
It's a very good point. That might not be the guy to go.
Well,
with.
No, they went after him in free agency last year. So the answer to your question is yes, he is allowed because they tried to sign him. He had a bad season though in Toronto.
He did, which might be buy low. I don't know. But that type of player, just because Draymond obviously has had the shooting issues, you don't want to necessarily play him at the five too much. His fit with Wiseman isn't so great. Hell, I might want to just experiment like crazy and go Wiseman, that type of player. I have no idea.
I like Olynyk for them. Now, I don't know. Olynyk had a good close after he was basically a throw-in in the Oladipo trade. He kind of had a good close for Houston, and maybe he gets too much. But if they could get him like taxpayer mid-level or below, talk about a stretch big who's tougher defensively than people think. I like him.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Can I throw a trade out there that will get zero fans excited, but I think could be a nice little asset play? Let's say it is Kuminga who falls to 7, which, by the way, we should get to like the book night Kuminga 6-7 because that is the swing of the draft. But Memphis at 10 has the Warriors 2024 first-round pick because they had to move off Andre Iguodala so quickly to execute the D'Angelo Russell sign-in trade that's led to Wiggins and the 7th pick, ironically. If Memphis loves somebody so much at 7, and if the Warriors believe they can go back to 10, let's say, and get Moses Moody, who I know they like, you could just flip 7 and 10 and take back your 2024 first-rounder, maybe? I mean, like, that would set up your cupboard of assets a lot better because you don't have to worry about the step-in rule and not being able to trade 2025 and 2023 then. I think that's, again, that's not something that would help next year's rotation, but that's just, like, something I've been looking at. Like, could they maybe get their first-rounder back and just move back a couple spots?
Yeah, I mean, that would make a lot of sense. The question is, what is that pick?
Was it what's 10 compared to 7?
No, what's the 24 pick they giving up? It could be great, right?
No. They're not giving up a 24 pick.
I mean, getting back. If Memphis is really good, they're basically just
no. You're not getting Memphis pick. You're getting your own pick back.
Oh, you're talking about the pick from Iguodala? Yeah.
Yes.
But the point is, like, if they're really good, what is that? So, you know, I know in the NFL they have like the values on the picks, right? So, you know, like in order to jump 3 spots, you need this and this. So you wonder if it's a 10 and 28, does that get you up to 7? Is that a good value pick or is it just enough to get your own pick back?
I think one of the things it does is it gets you back to like having all your first round picks where if you do make a big swing at the deadline,
you
have all your picks. Yeah. You know, you have all your picks. Anyway, that's just something I've thought about now that I've seen Memphis maybe trying to move up. And that's only if you're like, look, they don't really want Kuminga. And all their intel tells them Moody will be there at 10. You're going to get the guy you want anyways. Now suddenly you have your first round pick back. I don't know. I don't even know if Memphis would be interested in that. Maybe they love that Warriors pick. Before we get to actually the draft prospects and what might happen, any other trades or anything out there that you guys are interested in?
Nah, I don't like these trades this time of year.
Let's talk 6-7. You know, Book Knight went out to Oklahoma City and had dinner with Sam Presti, and I'm assuming Sam Presti probably didn't want that out there, but James Book Knight is a very good interview and put that out there himself. You know, the Thunder's interested in Book Knight at 6, clearly, if they use that pick. That is what would bring Kuminga to 7 and juice up the Warriors' potential trade offers. But at the same time, if you guys were making the pick, would you want Kuminga to go six so Book Knight is there at seven? Because the Warriors also have shown a bunch of interest, kind of like some hidden interest in Book Knight, almost like they're trying to, you know, mask it a little bit, which is a hint. What do you think about that little area of the draft, and who do you like more?
Ethan, does Book Knight fit the Killian Hayes profile?
I mean, that's the thing with Book Knight is some of these stats, you worry about him, but we're off stats now, right? So I don't know. You got to give me the scout stake. You got to
He played baseball growing up. He's from the Bronx. I mean, I don't know. Like, is that good sign? You know, multi-sport athlete.
Five-tool player, you think? He's got the five tools?
He's a good interview. Yeah. I like him as an interview.
Why did he shoot less than 30% on threes?
He had a wrist injury that was mentioned in his media day yesterday.
Little Jacob Evans flashback. Ooh, I don't know. That's what they said about Jacob Evans. And the lack of assists. I guess, what's the affirmative case for Book Knight? That's what I want to know. Because Kuminga, I know that there were some whispers, some rumblings that people didn't like how he handled the G League bubble. That might be good intel, but at the same time, I do wonder if that's the best environment to judge a young player. It just seems like the upside of a Kuminga, where he was before, as you were saying, Anthony, that there was the thinking that the Warriors would have no shot at him because of the pick protection, that he would fall into there. So that's why I'm more excited about Kuminga, but what's the affirmative case for Book Knight? That's what I'm wondering.
Marcus, deliver it.
Somebody who could create a shot, especially somebody who can get to the rim. Like, that's the case. They need players who do not need Stephen Curry to be able to get an open look. They are desperate for those players. In a couple years, especially as you don't want to put this load on Steph, you know, if when he's 35, 36 years old, those type of players will be valuable. Second unit players especially, but guys you could put with Steph. You just can't have one dude creating all of the offense year in and year out. And that's not saying he's going to score all the points, but somebody you can put the ball in their hands and say, go get a bucket. They just need they need guys like that. They don't have that. And until Draymond finds his offense, that becomes a major, major need for them. So that's the case for Book Knight. I was told by one Warriors exec that they value players who can shoot and dribble. Like, in the playoffs, the ability to shoot and handle becomes very important.
Sounds very Bob Myers.
He's trying to out your source.
Yeah,
he's
it wasn't to out Bob your Myers, source. But man.
No, I'm just saying it sounds like a very Bob Myers philosophy. I'm not giving you the whole that it's Bob Myers.
It's from his staff, so I would imagine he hires people who share his philosophy. But players who can shoot and dribble in the playoffs matter, right? Book Knight would fit that mold. Like, they need somebody who can create offense.
Reggie Jackson came up big in the playoffs.
Huge. You know,
to go with that kind of thinking.
And it wasn't the first time. I saw a young Reggie Jackson. This is important because we're talking about young guys making an impact in their first 3 years. I saw a young Reggie Jackson win a playoff game in the grit and grind Memphis arena.
Maybe this means absolutely nothing, but it would be interesting if Book Knight was taken, I mean, not over Kuminga, but the idea that we're comparing them. Book Knight, 2019, his RSCI top 100 ranking, that's how they rank all the high school players coming in, 72. Kuminga, 2020 RSCI ranking, 4. So that's, as far as pedigree goes, that's quite the chasm.
That only matters if you have the choice between the two, right? They won't have the choice between the two.
Which, you're right, is they don't. The team that has the choice between the two is Sam Presti. And what's interesting is, I mean, Sam Presti historically has been a great drafter, right? He is going to decide which one he thinks is a better prospect, and you have to get the one that isn't. So that's interesting.
The question is, Book Knight goes 6, and Kuminga falls to you at 7. Do you take the best player in the draft, or do you take the guy who fits you best in Moses Moody? That's the question of the draft. And if so, like, once you decide that, once you make that decision, now comes into play, well, do we take Moody here? Do we move back? What's at play? But that's when the phone's going to ring, right? When Kuminga falls to 7.
That's not when the phone's going to ring. The phone's already ringing. I thought the most transparent part of Bob Myers' press yesterday was
2:45.
Yes, well, he was saying that, and then, you know, Tim, who had, you know, he's not on here, but he asked a couple good questions that were kind of pointed, and within the middle of Bob saying basically, hey, I as of now, I think we're making the pick, but that can always change. And then he said, are some trades dependent on who's on the clock at seven? Basically, like, maybe a team's already lining it up saying, we'll make this trade, but only if Jonathan Kuminga is there at seven. And there's no way for the Warriors to know that at this point. So, yeah, I mean, I think that maybe the best thing that can happen for them is Book Knight going six, because what it might open up.
The options might open up. That, to me, is going to be the decision of the draft. Like, if this thing is shaken out, do they just take the best player with the highest ceiling available to them? Or do they go with the win now approach, and do they take one of the trades? Do they get the guy who fits best? Because if Kuminga ends up at seven, there's going to be a reason, right? And I'd want to know what that reason is. If it's everybody saying above them, like, we don't want to wait for him. I mean, I get that, but I'd want to know why he's at seven, because his hype and his talent doesn't say number seven.
They've spent the last 3 weeks, you know, searching for their reasoning, and they went out and they privately worked him out. They went out to dinner with him in Miami. Like, the one thing that's helped them, and I think I said this on the last podcast, they've known for a few weeks, and Kuminga's clearly known for a few weeks, that falling to seven is a possibility, and that's given them a chance to prep. Where, you know, there are some draft nights where you have no idea the guy's going to fall, and then suddenly you have 2 minutes and maybe you haven't done the prep work, and you're like, why is this guy here? But they've done the prep work.
It's also interesting that Myers, and I think he was being honest, I don't think he was being coy, indicated that trading up just doesn't seem to be a plausible scenario, and maybe less so because of what the Warriors want, more that these other teams might have it locked in that this is a five player draft or who knows what. It just seemed like there wasn't a whole lot of hunger being conveyed in the Myers press conference to that possibility.
Yeah, he basically said no when I asked him about that, which, you know, not only that, I think...
Does that sound like they're saying we're not trading Wiseman, so that's why we can't move up?
I feel like that's how you're reading it, and I mean,
clearly, right?
Is there anybody on the list where you're looking, you're going, maybe if they can do it, maybe they should think about it, maybe they should take a shot? I mean, I'll tell you the guy that kind of pops into my mind, and it runs totally counter to what I'm saying about Bradley Beal. But I think maybe you take a shot at Green if you can get him. You know, maybe he just seems to have that superstar.
It just
potential.
Seems like he's not only is he two, but there's like buzz over the last 48 hours that he was like so impressive to the Pistons that there's
that
a chance
now,
that,
yeah. thinking they're picking.
So Green is. Yeah. I just think he's unreachable. I think the only guy you could maybe reach is Suggs. Yeah,
you don't think you could start a. I don't know, throwing some cash to broke Tillman Fertitta behind the scenes, you know, maybe navigate a little bit of skullduggery in some way.
Crypto
to Tilly. You can't do that. That's something you can't do.
I'm just glad that we got a Tillman Fertitta reference.
Oh, we were overdue.
It's been
for
too
it.
Long. It's
We've
been
got
at least
Presti
like
and
four
Tillman.
Episodes.
We,
yes.
We win it right
drink,
now.
Drink. Everyone drunk for the draft.
So, by the way, did you see Jordan Poole at the Jamal Crawford Pro-Am? There you go. We got the Jamal Crawford reference in. Everybody.
Yeah, and I believe Andrew Bogut podcasted about it. How about David Lee? We need a David Lee.
We need a David Lee. Where's TK? So, if you could move, I don't know. I guess it was a hypo, but you figure Memphis wants to get up again, right? If that's possible, why isn't 7-14 possible? It just feels weird that Bob is saying.
You mean 7-14 to jump up?
To jump up two spots, three spots. All they gotta do is get to four, right?
Yeah, well, you say that. I think one of the problems is
I think Raymond Ritter coached Bob on how to talk right there. Sorry, we're just doing all the references. We got to get them all in.
There you go. Maybe David Lee. Maybe this. Anyway, I think the.
Did you hear that little bit of Raymond Ritter, Ethan? Did you hear his?
Yeah. The problem is the Magic have 5-8 and the Thunder have 6-16-18 and like every future first round pick that you could ask for. So like there's teams with better ammo than 7-14.
I mean, but like six, you can go up to six. Oklahoma
with
City,
the Thunder?
Oklahoma City love
Do they
picks.
Need? Yeah, it, so you're saying I would not give up 7-14 for six.
No, I wouldn't, but like it just feels weird that he's like, yeah, we can't move up. My take on it, my guess is people are saying, you do have something we want,
right?
James Wiseman.
Well, yeah. we're not giving it up. So 7-14 isn't getting any action, is what it sounds like he said.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Here's a question: At what point is 7-14 worth a spot? You know, at 5, do you think 7-14 is worth 5?
Do you like Scotty Barnes? I'm more down on Scotty Barnes than most people. I just don't see his offense.
He seems high variance. He seems like it's gonna be he's gonna be incredible or just not really fit because of the issues of the shot. But a lot of people, Suggs is somebody that a lot of people love, you know, maybe for 4. I mean, I don't know. That's it.
I'd give up those 2 picks for Suggs.
I would too.
I just don't think that's
I wouldn't do it outside of that. I wouldn't do it outside of that.
So 4. So 7-14 is worth a move up to 4 in your estimation.
I agree. Especially if you can get up to 4 before the draft and now you can dangle 4 and Wiseman. And go get Anthony Slater's guy.
You're trying to find a path to Cade Cunningham. Somehow trying to find a path to Cade Cunningham.
I'm the only one. Am I the only one who still likes Cade Cunningham? I bet.
Cade Cunningham, man, it seems like nobody. He went from incredibly hyped, number one pick, presumed, and still in that slot, and yet it just seems like nobody's that excited. Like nobody's talking.
I would say Cade Cunningham is considered the top pick in a top part of a draft that is considered, like, you know, once in a decade. But the problem is Cade Cunningham is not once in a decade. Cade Cunningham is not Zion. He's not LeBron. I mean, maybe he becomes that. And, you know, I'm an Oklahoma State grad. Maybe I'm judging him too harshly because he only got us to – he didn't even get us to the Sweet 16. Unbelievable.
Man.
But
come on.
I know. I shouldn't be doing this. I should be really hyping them up. But you know what I mean? Like, I think about this about the top level of the draft. Do you see anyone in those top 4? They'll all, I think, become very good players. Do you see any of those 4 becoming league-changing talents? Like top 5 in the league, number ones on title teams? I don't even think there's a number one on a title team up there. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think maybe Mobley, but you've got these other guys coming down the pike. These big guys they're making these days, man. I mean, you might really impress.
You mean at the big man factory?
At the big man factory, whether it's old Chet Holmgren or, and I cannot pronounce his name, out of France. We struggled with this last time on the podcast. Like, I'm scared to even try.
You've already labeled who you're talking
Wimbanyama,
about.
Wimbanyama, man. Wimbanyama.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. Nicely done. So I thought a little bit Mobley, but then I thought, but man, these at the big man factory, they're coming out with the, like, with the iPhones, with the 11, the 12, then the 13. You know, you might be overtaken even if you impress. So I don't know. I don't have confidence necessarily that one of these guys is going to become a Giannis level impact player, finals MVP, but yet it seems like there's a lot of talent.
I'm writing about the 14th pick today because I actually think the 14th pick might be more influential on next season's roster than the 7. It's a much higher leverage version of when they took Jordan Poole at 28 and Eric Paschal at 41. You don't have to mention, you know, Alan Smiley each went 39, but hey, there's another drink reference. We got him in there. But,
oh my God.
But you know, Paschal was more ready as a rookie, clearly. And now Poole is better. But I think in year one, who they get at 14 might matter more than who they get at 7 if we're just talking about like winning games. I think Davion Mitchell might fall to 14, which that's becoming an increasing possibility, which should interest them. Duarte, obviously, there's a high level of interest. Trey Murphy has caught their attention as just like a pure 3-and-D guy.
Intrigued by him. Very intrigued by him.
Is there anybody else or like I'll mention quickly, yes, Kispert. You know, I could see him just 13 off the bench per game and just hitting 150 threes as a rookie and yes, getting played off the floor potentially in the West Finals, but man, he could help you win some regular season games.
So y'all not gonna mention Keon Johnson? Cold blooded.
I mean, that's a project. I'm not sure they want a project at 14. Maybe I'm wrong.
Here's a question, because when I look at a guy like Trey Murphy, I think to myself, you know, Sadiq Bey kind of impressed, didn't he? You know, wasn't he sort of one of the more positive draft stories? Maybe that's something to think about for that sort of prototype of a shooter of that size. So I just look at it at this point of the draft. I don't have much confidence in this guy's going to be good. This guy's not going to be good. I look at it more as I'm excited, I'm keyed in, I'm interested. If they got Trey Murphy, I'd be pretty interested. I'd go, okay, I'm excited to see how that works out.
He's very intriguing as a prospect. I do think if Davion Mitchell is there, that's the pick. And they will have a party about it.
And they'll fist pump. I mean, that's great value at 14. I mean,
there will definitely be a party about it. The interesting part is if somehow they end up choosing between Trey Murphy and Chris Duarte. That, to me, would be interesting because now, like, we'll find out how much size matters to them and experience, right?
You know what else we'll find out, Marcus, as you've been saying today? We'll find out how much, you know, an ability to go get your own shot matters because Trey Murphy, like you said, taller, a little bit younger, probably a little bit purer of a just like a catch and shoot guy. But Chris Duarte can go get a shot, more than Murphy can go get his.
If this dude is not going to be better than Jordan Poole, like at any point, then you're probably better off filling another need.
True or false? Question of fear. The Warriors draft a player in this draft who turns out to be better than Jordan Poole.
This is a book night or Poole question.
I don't think they're drafted book night, so.
So this is a Kuminga or Poole question? This is a Moses Moody or Poole question?
My thing is Poole has what is just so, what's most valued in NBA. I don't see anybody being able to shoot like Jordan Poole, and that makes his valuable incredibly better. He shot 35% from the field last year, and it feels like
from three. You're talking about.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 43% from three, but it feels like it was better than that, right? It just feels like he was a more reliable shooter than that, and I feel like that's a. I don't know if like you said, book night, man, that form looks like there's something there, but if Kuminga could ever shoot anywhere near Poole, he's gonna be a superstar. And that's what I feel like. If the guys we're talking about end up being shooters, it's over. I just don't know that you can kind of bank on that.
I wanted to ask you guys about one more player, Josh Giddey. Do you have any deeper takes on Giddey as a fit?
I was just watching some highlights of him. It's interesting because statistically, there are some similarities to what LaMelo did. And, you know, obviously coming out of Australia, the NBL, that's an easy parallel to make, but I have no idea if this means anything. He just moves so much differently than LaMelo. He's very compact, and I'm not saying that puts anything on his ceiling, but it's not that loose kind of rhythm dribble that LaMelo has. It's a very different aesthetic approach, and you know, like maybe somebody has any other kind of take on what that means, but I just found that interesting where I was watching it and going, okay, how are these guys different? And that was the first thing that at least stood out to me. It seems like that would be a little bit risky. There isn't really the proven shot, but that is another player where I'm intrigued if they get that guy. I'm very intrigued.
The level of craftiness to me is appealing, right? Like, I feel like Giddey is a guy who's going to figure out a way to be effective because, like, he's going to craft his way in that very international style of play. You know, who Joe Ingles comes to mind. Like, the guy who's not going to have all of the tools, but they're just crafty enough and got good enough handle and think the game well enough and shoot well enough to kind of make stuff happen. And we could agree, like, you know, that ability, right, was what was lacking, right? They had a lot of players who just couldn't intuitively kind of create on the fly. I like that. I don't know if I'd take him. If he ain't making it to 14.
I don't think he's making it to 14.
If he's at 14, you got to take him. But
I mean, but, you know, there's all these possibilities of, like, these trade downs we're talking about where maybe you move down to 10, like I said, with Memphis, and then suddenly that's when I think, you know, you're more in his ballpark. I'd be pretty shocked if they got him at 7.
I like the idea of him in transition with Steph. I like the idea of him pushing the ball with Steph. I think that in the half court, I've got some concerns about Giddey, and that could be a problem, but it just seems like he could immediately do something to their transition attack if he's productive enough and can shoot well enough, be good enough around the rim for them. And that's one way I could see him making an impact early versus maybe some of these other guys where you have to wait for them to really develop.
I saw some podcast clip out of Australia where Luke Longley was like, I've been calling Steve Kerr every day, and I'm not going to do an Australian accent, but it was in an Australian accent. He was like, I've been calling Steve Kerr every day, telling him, like, Giddey's the guy. I just thought that was interesting.
that's a good sign. I mean, it might mean nothing, but it, look, if he was saying the opposite, then that'd be a bit of a red flag, right? Yeah, okay, okay. Again, that's another guy where at this level of the draft.
Luke Longley using his championship pool on behalf of.
I mean, that's the. This is, again, how I think about it. I can't tell you who at this level of the draft is going to be good. But I just have the guys where I go, okay, I'm excited. I'm
we
got to
get this hesitant pump faking version of draft.
You don't like Carl Landry.
Hedge every statement. You're just like, man, Killian Hayes really got this dude shook. Slater, like,
I feel like I'm Carl Landry right now. I'm just down there. I'm just pump, pump. I'm loony. That's what I am. I'm loony right now with the takes. I'm loony.
Like, man, dude, let it go. What you mean? Like, are you all right, Killian?
I'm just being real. I'm talking about how I think about it at this level of the draft. It's one of who am I excited for, who am I not excited for, and giddy, I'd be giddy for giddy.
Can you fall in love with somebody, please? Like, and you know.
can you fall in love with somebody? That is a big question.
Yeah, that's a life question right there.
I mean, well, the life one, he's already got that. Shout out to Allie.
Ah, yes.
There you go. anything else that draft-wise?
I will say this. Thursday is the draft, right? And Friday is the press conference. And for the first time, I'm really feeling it's so much harder to go to Chase like that, right? Like, so we're going to be, I'm sitting there thinking like, yo, because it's always been downtown. And then the year that it wasn't, that it was downtown Oakland. And the year that it wasn't, it was, you know, we had a pandemic. But so this is going to be the first time we do draft at Chase Center. And then turn around. I don't know. Did you go to the Jordan Poole, Nico Mannion one last year? Did one of y'all go?
No. First of all, it wasn't Jordan Poole, Nico Mannion.
I'm sorry. By the name of James Wiseman. James Wiseman.
Yes, I did. It was actually the best in-person access of the entire season. What happened before the season.
He got hugs from the Warrior staff. They were so happy to see.
There was definitely like it was me, like Mark Spears. I think Monty Poole was down there. There was a very few media members. And they had, you know, it was. We're kind of emerging from the pandemic, but still not
yeah,
really.
Like we made it. The pandemic's finally over.
Yeah,
so
but there was definitely, they're like, oh, wow, media members to speak to in person. I've never like seen, you know, people so happy to talk to reporters.
Felt like high school reporting days, huh? When they were happy you showed up. They were like, oh, that's good.
Basically.
I was just like plotting that out. Like, oh, okay, we got to, oh, man, you got to factor in the bridge, all that.
That's crazy. Remember from that press conference when James Wiseman came off the stage to talk to Sean Livingston, and he was sitting there chatting with Sean Livingston a little bit, and he just like towering over Sean Livingston. And I was like, oh, that's, yeah, he's huge. You know, I do think we forget sometimes what Wiseman, if he figures it out, could be in the league just because of just like the size speed combo.
That's a real thing. That's a real thing. I was just thinking how to artfully say that I don't think I'm going to be going to don't think I'm going to be going to Chase. But I wish you guys luck on the journey. And you know, it is another era. It is another era in the Warriors' chase to reclaim their glory.
The Thunder offered reportedly SGA for the number one pick. Is SGA available?
Do we know, first of all, do we know that Zach Lowe
reportedly
said on his podcast that SGA is not, he doesn't think reportedly he's available. So I don't know if that offer was actually made. I don't know where that came from.
I don't know. I'm not dissing whoever put it out there. That's what I'm just saying, reportedly.
It's totally one of those things where you think about it if he wasn't being offered for such a thing. But if he's being offered for it, you start thinking, what's wrong with this dude? Like, what's going on? Why are you trying to give up on him? I thought he was your future. So yeah, I don't know. That's I like SGA. I like him.
I mean,
a lot.
Don't you gotta make that call though? Just to see if it's real.
Oh yeah.
That's probably the most irritating part for these GMs. A little report come out, now all your colleagues are calling like, so what's going on? Like, you're like, man,
I'm sure Sam doesn't mind at all. That doesn't seem like it.
Can we get a draft pick before we go? I mostly want Ethan.
Moody.
About his picks.
Moody.
So you feeling moody right now?
Feeling pretty moody.
Maybe you should take a nap. So Moody 7. Who you got 14?
14. Luke Longley swung me, man. I'm all about giddy.
I don't think he's making it. Luke Longley swung me.
Yeah, if Giddy's there at 14, I'm saying go Giddy.
Go Giddy.
I'm going Kuminga and Davion Mitchell.
You know, we did a beat writer mock draft that's coming out, and that is who I picked because Kuminga was there at 7 and Mitchell was there at 14, and that's who I picked, and that'll be like our last mock draft that's out tomorrow, I think. I think that Kuminga at 7, I think Mitchell goes before 14. I think some team's just going to, like the Spurs at 12 or the Pacers at 13. You know, Rick Carlisle's there now being like, get me this like defensive point guard. So I think at 14, I'm guessing Duarte.
I'll go Kuminga, and then I'll go Trey.
So you just off Moody that fast? Like,
yeah, I mean, I didn't know necessarily that we were saying that Kuminga would be there. So if he's there, I'm going to go Kuminga. And then because I didn't get my shooter, then I'm going Trey Murphy.
And if he's not there, you're going Moody. Got it.
And then I'm going something else later down the road.
Yeah, if he's not there, I'm going Book Knight. Book Knight, let's go. But all of this needs to be cashed in for Cade. Include Ethan in the trade package for Cade. Send Ethan to Detroit.
I'll take that sacrifice for the greater good.
Maybe we should send Slater, who doesn't think Cade Cunningham is the number one pick, clearly. So maybe
we need to send Ethan to Detroit to cover the Killian Hayes, James Wiseman era in Detroit.
Hey man, what if they get a good pick and roll going? Like don't discount the possibility.
The lefty pick and roll, that would be interesting.
Next time you hear from us, you will know the future of the Warriors. Well, maybe not the future, but the direction. How about that?
Smiley Geech comes out just geeching all over the place. Kelly Oubre, you're a knockdown shooter. We believe in you.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.